Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling, and it is just me at the top of the show this week. And it's a little bit sad and lonely, though fortunately Jonathan Jones will be joining me in just a bit to recap all the Sunday afternoon action. However, we're trying something a little bit different on the Monday show this week. In the olden days, they called this a monologue. And as everyone knows, there's no better way to start a monologue than announcing that you are about to start a monologue. So here we go. It's no secret that the Saints, in transforming from a fantasy football darling to Super Bowl contenders over the past three seasons, have done so by becoming a more balanced team on offense, but more importantly, a good and at times great defensive team. And when Dennis Allen's unit has been great, it's usually been because of a guy we've kind of overlooked just a little bit this year, Marshawn Lattimore. He's easily one of the top 10 cornerbacks in football, maybe top 5, but he hasn't consistently locked down receivers like he did two seasons ago as a rookie when he was arguably the best corner in football. On Sunday night against the Cowboys, Lattimore made Amari Cooper invisible. And while he did get occasional safety help, he certainly didn't get it frequently. It wreaked havoc with that Dallas offense all the way down the line. They couldn't get the ground game going, and they couldn't find anyone as far as a secondary weapon goes in that passing game. That is how you arrived at this ugly 12-10 slog of a victory for New Orleans, and that's how they want to do it. And Allen, by the way, he finished the game in style. He called for that slot blitz, which, by the way, everyone should do on the Hail Mary attempt. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the rookie DB, applying the pressure to keep Cowboys receivers from getting anywhere even close to the end zone on that final play there. Dak Prescott's pass had absolutely no chance. As for the Cowboys, it felt a lot more like 2018 than 2019, which, you know, it's not great, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. You had Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith looking as fast as ever. Vander Esch seemed to be everywhere Alvin Kamara was. Taysom Hill, when they sent him out there for that red zone read option call, Jalen Smith really chased him down and foiled that play without really any issue for the Cowboys defense. The offense just didn't have the answers, which was a first since Kellen Moore took over this year, and it's something they're going to have to rectify going forward, because, you know, right now if they go against a team that has that top end cornerback who can take Cooper out of the game, they need to have an answer if that goes down. But the story of the night was this. 5 years ago, if you took Drew Brees out of the Saints lineup, you would have one of the worst teams in football. Right now, the Saints are an ultra-conservative offense run by an ultra-conservative quarterback, and it's just not going to carry them to victories. You even saw some sloppy play from that offense. You had one play where the rookie center, Eric McCoy, surprised everyone with the early snap and ended up being basically a free sack for Robert Quinn at that point. Bridgewater took a bad sack on that last possession that took him out of field goal range and erased a chance to stretch that lead to 5 points before the Cowboys got it for one final drive. But Sunday night marked the first time in the Sean Payton era that the Saints won a game without scoring a single touchdown. Now you have a team that without Drew Brees has won back-to-back games against 2018 playoff teams in the Cowboys and the Seahawks. And by the way, Dallas and Seattle, both 3-0 otherwise this season. The Saints are sitting at 3-1 with a one-game lead on the field in the NFC South. With or without Brees, this is going to be a playoff contender, and fortunately for them, they're a month or so away from being with Brees again. All right, it was a Sunday full of upsets, QB changes, and all sorts of headlines. Jonathan Jones is joining me in just a moment to break it all down. Join us, won't you? All right, we're now joined by Jonathan Jones. Talk a little Sunday afternoon football here, and let's start a little Browns-Ravens here. How quickly this turn for the Browns, who we were all ready to just absolutely flush down the toilet here, and they now lead the AFC North.
Browns are making it easy, right, Gary, to sort of flush them down the toilet with Baker Mayfield's rabbit ears and Freddie Kitchens and the 4th and 9, and was it an audible? Who knows? but listen, that they were able to go to Baltimore After Baltimore at 2-1, and their one was against, obviously, the Kansas City Chiefs, Lamar Jackson playing extremely well, that they were able to go up 40-18, you know, late in the game. A game that every single time the Ravens started threatening, right, it was a Nick Chubb touchdown. Whether he was punching it in at the end of the third quarter, or he was breaking off that 88-yard rush there at the top of the fourth quarter. So I think that I've been saying this for a very long time, Gary. Like, you know, the Browns for so long obviously were not competitive, and we don't have to go back over the 1-31. But last year, we don't have to go back over the 1-31. Last year, they were starting to get competitive. This year, I was curious, how is this team with all of this ego, with a new head coach, with Baker Mayfield, how are they going to handle adversity for the first time? And they got punched in the mouth last week. They've been punched in the mouth a couple times this season, and that they were able to come back in a big AFC North matchup early in the season in Baltimore to win the way that they did. That shows me a little bit about this team's mettle.
I was going to say, it just doesn't fit into the narrative at all now. I mean, we were all ready to, Baker Mayfield. He's picking fights with Rex Ryan now. I don't know. Right. I don't know about this enemies list that Baker Mayfield keeps. He's got to upgrade it. He's got to get better, better rivals here.
He does, and it was like it's such like who cares what Rex Ryan says? Mm-hmm. Like honestly, he's so unimportant, and I was surprised that word ever really even got back to him, and that everyone loved his comeback on Rex Ryan. Yo, he had 3 days to come up with that comeback.
You do not need 72 hours to come up with a good way to dunk on Rex Ryan. I mean, it's the lowest hanging fruit, and it's the same. Whatever. He goes after Colin Cowherd and those guys, and I won't bust on him too much because he's more successful professionally than me, and therefore my social better. But
that is true.
Yeah, it's I don't know these fights he picks. He's got to talk some smack. Talk about Lamar. Talk about gin up this rivalry a little bit because this is going to be a good one for the next like decade here. But I thought it was nice. They actually got Baker protected early in this game, and he still got the happy feet. Still some bad habits seeping in here, but you kind of saw less of it in this game, which was, that's what they're going to have to do to get it going forward. But the one other thing I wanted to mention on this one was Steve Wilks, I'll say moderately maligned Steve Wilks due to last year's sort of disaster in Arizona, and then
extremely maligned in Arizona.
Yes, yeah. I don't know how much that gets out of the Southwest there. I don't know if that makes it over to our East Coast cocoons, but
that's right.
Kind of a shaky year for shaky start to the year for the defense. They played well against the Rams last week, I felt, especially with the depleted secondary. And they went in there. They had a beat on Lamar Jackson. I mean, they did a really nice job defensively today in this one.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Wilks is showing exactly why he was a head coaching candidate mm-hmm. when he left Carolina. He obviously got a very raw deal out in Arizona. And I can't wait to talk more about Arizona and that talentless roster out there. All put together by the GM Steve Keim that somehow still has his job, but that Wilks. Listen, I was up there for 3 days during training camp. I was told by somebody, don't be surprised if Myles Garrett has 20 plus sacks this season. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he had one on Sunday, but we obviously see what kind of world beater that Myles Garrett is. And I've been saying for a long time, this defense does have the potential. I don't know if it's going to be in yards or if it's going to be points allowed. And after that week one game against Tennessee, it's probably not going to be in points allowed to be the top rated defense in the league. But they have, I mean, on paper, that their top 11, I'll put their top 11 up against anybody else's.
I mean, they got Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams coming back, presumably very soon. Both those guys, as of Saturday, were it sounded like they were going to play today. They did not. And, I mean, this is a team that suddenly, you know, whatever, 6 days later or whatever it was from last Sunday night, we're suddenly back on the bandwagon here. And they, look, in the most technical sense, they now have the inside track in the AFC North. They have broken serve at Baltimore. So not only do they technically have the tiebreaker, they have one on the road in Baltimore now. And you figure Pittsburgh and Cincinnati will sort of sink into irrelevance. And this is going to be the battle in December, Browns and Ravens.
Well, And thankfully for the Browns, because Odell Beckham Jr. only had two catches and had zero for 0 yards very late into the game. Mm-hmm. Two catches for 20 yards. His double reverse pass went incomplete. It really should have been caught. You know, Jarvis Landry, after his 8-catch, 167-yard performance, then got knocked out of the game with a concussion. So if the Browns did not win this game, and it, and you would flip that on its head, right, we're talking about a 1-3 Browns team that is not getting Odell Beckham the ball, that is now down Jarvis Landry. It'd be a huge thing, but right now it's okay. Odell's probably happy that they won. Who cares? Hopefully Jarvis comes back, and the 2-2 Browns, like you say, inside track in a very competitive division.
I know.
Well, minus the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'd like to. Just give someone the Odell Beckham line, and don't tell them the final score, and ask them what they think the storylines are in Cleveland today. So, nice win for the Browns here. Let's go out to L.A. I think the upset of the day, we had some upsets today, but I think this one was the biggest one. This is Tampa goes out to L.A., beats the Rams, and we've kind of talked a little bit this season about the sort of sleepy starts for the Rams, and I mean, look, the offensive line, especially on the interior, just not the same as it was. They can't quite get the run game going, and that's sort of seeping into what they do with all the play action stuff. Not that you have to establish the run to have effective play action, but they're kind of even getting away from doing that outside zone stuff that was such a staple of that offense for so long. But Bucks took full advantage. Bucks went out there and jumped on them early, and you know, it got a little bit hairy late, but this is a really impressive win for the Bucks.
Yeah, a little bit hairy late, but they jumped out to that 21-0 lead, and they got out to that 21-0 lead off of drives that went 60 yards, 50 yards, and 9 yards. And so when you do that, when you have those kinds of short fields, and so it's a little demoralizing for the Rams out there in the LA Coliseum. You love what Jameis is doing there. He has 4 touchdowns up until that last interception, the pick 6 that Marcus Peters had, where – you know, Marcus Peters got laid out at the goal line. Did you see that, Gary?
Oh, yeah.
Whew. Obviously evaluated for a concussion. Hope that he's going to be okay. But, you know, that turned the tide just a little bit. You know, this – I really liked what I saw out of Jameis. Well, let me back up because, first of all, when you go down 21-0, you're not going to really be able to establish the run. That was a huge thing that we were talking about in the preseason and obviously at the beginning of the year. What is Todd Gurley's health like? What are the Rams going to do? And in the first game of the season, we saw Todd Gurley and Malcolm Brown sort of splitting those carries, Todd Gurley getting a lot between the 20s and then Malcolm Brown taking it over. Mm-hmm. And then today we see that the Rams have 11 rushes for 28 yards. So that's – you just – I don't know. I don't want to be part of you have to run the football club, but you do have to rush the football more than that.
I mean, it was such a big part of their identity. And look, obviously, like you said, Jonathan, you can't come out when you're down 3 touchdowns and say, oh, let's run it 30 more times today and make sure we get those numbers up.
Right.
But the reason that McVay offense works is they so effectively meld the run game and the play action stuff. And a lot of that run game over the first really, you'd say up until December last year when Gurley first went down, it was so heavily based on the outside zone stuff, and that's just sort of gone away. And, you know, I've talked about it with Andy a lot, and he says it's those interior linemen are just not what they were last year when you had Roger Saffold, you had John Sullivan, those new guys there, particularly Brian Allen and the TCU guy, Joseph Noteboom, in the middle there. I mean, they're just not getting it done yet. You figure those guys will maybe trend up as the year goes on just because they're young, but you also don't want to make that assumption. And I don't know. You just look at this Rams team and you know, 3-1, now tied with the Seahawks atop that division, and you see some cracks in the facade. And you were kind of waiting for a day like this where it just they couldn't sort of sleepwalk through the first quarter and a half of the game and come back and get it.
On the other side, right, you have Jameis Winston, who I was talking about earlier. He comes into this game, I think, 5 touchdowns, 4 picks. He comes out of it with 9 touchdowns and 5 picks on the season. You know, everyone talked about Bruce Arians being the quarterback whisperer. Obviously, Byron Leftwich in his second act here in Tampa sort of has things going nicely. They lose, of course, to San Francisco. They drop that heartbreaker against Danny Dimes last week, but a tough win in Carolina. Now you go out to the Coliseum. Interested to see what Tampa does in New Orleans. I know that no one cares about the NFC South. no one ever cares about the NFC South.
they just produce the Super Bowl team like every other year, but that's about it.
That's exactly right. But, you know, is Tampa – I think that we had all sort of kind of earmarked the Tampa team as like, all right, the Saints are going to be number one. The Falcons and Panthers are going to be 2-3 in some order. Maybe one of them gets 10 wins and the other one gets 6. Who cares? But Tampa, no doubt, is going 4-12 or 5-11, right? And now we're looking at it like, hey, this is a 2-2 Tampa team that has some really solid wins. Their two wins are away from Raymond James Stadium. Then, of course, next week, they're going to have a tilt in New Orleans.
I was going to say that if they make a short field goal last week, they're sitting at 3-1 right now. And I don't want to play the what if with every team in the league, because obviously you could shift a lot of records doing that. But it's almost like last year when we got a little bit, I don't even know if we got fooled. Because we all kind of said, maybe were we sleeping on this Bucks team? And then, oh, no, see,
nope.
That's the Bucks, last place in the NFC South, and everything's right with the universe. But it's just kind of a different year. We're going to talk about the Falcons a little bit later in the show, and they might be done. They might be through with. Obviously the Saints without Breeze for a while, they're susceptible, and the Panthers are still figuring some things out. They had an impressive win today. But there's an opening here for the Bucs, and I don't know, Bruce Arians can coach.
He can, and Jameis Winston should be thinking his lucky stars that he got paired with Bruce Arians and that there is a window here, just as the Bucs said, you know what, we're going to let you play out that fifth-year option. I mean, there are not very many NFL teams in today's NFL that tell their quarterbacks, you can be an unrestricted free agent next year. That doesn't really matter. We have it with the Bucs. And the Tennessee Titans, obviously, surely they have the franchise tag available to them. But a lot of huge decisions that these two franchises, when they picked these guys 1-2, back when they did that, you certainly didn't think that they would have these sorts of decisions to make. Jameis Winston, so far, one quarter of the way through the season, is making it seem as though he has to stick around in Tampa.
It looks like it. Let's go out to Soldier Field. Bears, Vikings. This was just the quintessential Chicago Bears victory at Soldier Field. This was just a completely overwhelming performance by the defense. From now until the end of time, the Vikings will never be able to block the Bears' pass rush. But I guess the storyline in this, and look, anyone who listens to the podcast knows approximately what I think of Mitchell Trubisky's performance over the past year plus here. And
why don't you go ahead and remind us?
It's, Jonathan, I worry that he's regressing. And I worry that he was regressing from a point that was not very impressive to begin with. So
that's what I was going to ask. All right.
It's Trubisky injures his non-throwing shoulder on the first series, and Chase Daniel comes in. And look, I wondered about this last year when Trubisky went down and Daniel filled in, and they sort of squeaked by in a couple games, and they actually went out to East Rutherford and lost to the Giants in overtime at one point. But the problem with Mr. Trubisky is when he has to throw the ball further than, 3 to 5 yards downfield, you just don't know where it's going. And Chase Daniel is not a world beater, but you do generally know where the ball is going to end up when he throws it there. And he's a little less frantic when he works deeper into progressions. And it just seems like the floor of the offense is therefore higher. And when you have this defense that does things like, it does today, where they can just completely take over games, I kind of feel a little more comfortable with Chase Daniel going forward in this offense.
I completely agree with you, just because the defense is the engine of this team. And then you look at Trubisky, who, you're right, I mean, he's so successful when he's throwing it horizontally, when he's throwing it behind or at the line of scrimmage. And really, Nagy has been able to incorporate so many RPOs and so many that they're highly successful passes with very little risk, but they are successful in the short term, right? There is no big play real opportunity for these Bears. And you like that Daniel, that teams will not just sit on everything with Chase Daniel. You can't imagine that. I'm not saying that he's going to go out there and throw bomb after bomb. But, I mean, okay, play a single high safety against Mitch Trubisky. Absolutely. Hell, play man. I mean, who cares? Listen, the fact that the Bears were able to do this without Taylor Gabriel, who had just an incredible game last week, I thought that that was pretty impressive. And then, listen, that Trubisky goes out early and that Daniel's able to step in, that's what you want out of, what, a 10-year vet? I'm always surprised by how long Chase Daniel has been in the NFL. Kirk Cousins, I don't know how many times that we're going to say this, right? But Kirk Cousins has to play better.
The one thing I'll say in his defense is he was under siege, as we expected he would be in this game, and he just didn't I always point back to his last year in Washington when they stole a game in Seattle. It was a game where, they were playing like two street free agents on the line, and this was still like the back end of the Legion of Boom Seahawks, and he just pulled a game out of nowhere. He hit Josh Doctson with a big play late, and that's kind of been... He'll give you a moment like that sometimes. He didn't necessarily lose this one. He lost the one in Green Bay. I mean, he was just atrocious in week two. This was more, he was not, if you didn't have Patrick Mahomes back there or something, it just was not a game where you were going to generate offense considering what the Bears pass rush did to the offensive line here.
Okay, but hit Adam Thielen more than twice. Dude. I mean, Adam Thielen ends up with two receptions for 6 yards, and you know what his longest reception was? It was 6 yards.
I was going to say it was. I don't know exactly when Thielen got his first catch, but about midway through the third quarter, it just like a light bulb went off in my head, and it was like, oh, they have Adam Thielen on this team. They should throw it to him.
Yeah. They also have Dalvin Cook, who's, I don't know, running the ball really well right now. I agree with you. He gets sacked six times. I'm not going to put all six on him. I'm not even going to put half of them on him. That Vikings offensive line, as you mentioned, regressed to what we know the Vikings offensive line to do over the last, couple of years. All that said, though, I know the joke is about Kirk Cousins, especially when it comes to primetime games, but this is the Bears at Soldier Field in a national window. Like, step up.
I mean, only thing you can say if you're looking on the bright side for the Vikings, got to get them at home. You got to go hold serve here. You lost the two road games outside to Chicago and Green Bay now, and go sweep the rest of your division games, and you'll probably win this division. But things are interesting in the NFC North now, and it looks like I don't know. I don't even know how you'd handicap it at this point. We're gonna get to the Lions in a little bit. The Lions who just had their heart shattered against the Chiefs. But I don't know, Jonathan. I don't know how this shakes out here.
Yeah, no team with a losing record in the NFC North right now.
Let's go down to Houston. Panthers at Texans. This is your local team.
I'm in Charlotte.
You are our Panthers correspondent. Kyle Allen, 3-0, a Garoppolo-like 3-0 as a starter to start his career here. What's the feeling down there? Are people ready to ride this, or are people just kind of like, hey, ready to sort of pat him on the back and be like, all right, Cam's back now. Nice job, buddy.
Oh, right. So that was the case last week after he goes out there and gets the victory against the Arizona Cardinals. Everybody understood why. He goes to Houston, a Houston Texans team, which, again, I know that we don't want to play this game, right? But if the Texans take a little bit longer to score that final touchdown against the New Orleans Saints, we're talking about a 3-0 Texans team, despite everything. And so we're talking about a 2-1 Texans team instead that was the favorite. Kyle Allen goes down there against a much better defense, Whitney Mercilus and J.J. Watt. He ends up turning the ball over three times. And that is his issue. That is his fatal flaw. Mm-hmm. He just cannot hold on to the football. He turns the ball over three times and forced fumbles. And yet somehow this team ends up winning 16-10 with a fantastic defensive effort. Shout out to Ron Rivera and defensive coordinator Eric Washington there. So to your point about are they ready to ride this, it has always kind of been the consideration that Cam is going to sit out through the week 7 bye. So they have the Jags next week, and then they have the Bucks in London, then they have the bye, and then he comes back out around Halloween, and they play the 49ers. So 6 weeks off. What happens, Gary, if Kyle Allen is 4-0 in that stretch where he has now been 5-0 in the same time that Cam has been 0-8. What then happens? That's the interesting thing.
I'll tell you, to me, I can't stop looking at those three lost fumbles. I mean, that's why he got benched at the University of Houston when he transferred there. And, you know, he was the blue chip prospect, and he was over with Kyler at A&M, and they both got out of there, and he went to Houston, and all of a sudden he was getting benched for some dude who I can't remember his name. Kyle Padma, maybe, sounds about right.
Sure.
And that was that was it.
Not going to work here anymore.
That was the end of his collegiate run there. But this Panthers D. I will say one thing, and they caught a break on this, and it was a very low scoring game, and everyone loves DeAndre Hopkins. He's a fantastic receiver. Love how he plays stylistically, and obviously everyone loves his production. The interception he threw on the gadget play, I cannot for the life of me figure out how he let that ball go, because that did not fool anyone. The entire back, Ross Cockrell just sat back on the backside of that and just caught basically a very short punt for an interception. And that was a second and short in the red zone.
So that was, I think, their second play in the red zone in the game. And you immediately take it out of Deshaun Watson's hands, mm-hmm. and you put it in DeAndre Hopkins' hands to do the gadget play. So I understand what you're saying. Like, how could he throw that ball? There's clearly, you know, number 47 in white standing right there. But also, how do you call that play?
Yeah.
Like, in my opinion, you save it for a little bit later.
Yeah, I mean, the instruction has to be, if there is anyone on that side of the field, you cannot throw that ball. Because really, Patrick Mahomes might not complete that pass. And DeAndre Hopkins certainly was not going to, and that was just that's devastating in a game like this where they're just points are at a premium, and you're down there in scoring range, and you don't get points. I know Hopkins got deep once, and Watson just missed him, but there were no big plays from this passing game, and it's not what we're used to seeing from a Texans offense, and that's a lot of credit to, as you said, to this Panthers defense.
Yeah, I think the longest passing play was a 14-yard completion to Kenny Stills. So the two longest plays for the Houston Texans today was a 40-yard gash and then a 25-yard rush by Carlos Hyde. Other than that, not a single pass from Deshaun Watson over 15 yards. So it was a very surprising loss by the Houston Texans again. Shout out to the Panthers defense, who quietly they are crushing it in terms of passing yards allowed and then also sacks. And listen, no one's getting a medal for getting after Deshaun Watson with the Houston Texans offensive line, but go back to last week when they were getting after Kyler Murray again. Mm-hmm. This is, I think, quietly, again, no one cares about the NFC South, right? And so it's easy to overlook the Carolina Panthers defense, but pay attention to them moving forward.
All right, Patriots go up to Buffalo, and they get the early touchdown. They get a blocked punt return touchdown soon after that, and then this just turned into an absolute ugly slugfest going forward. The Patriots did finally give up a touchdown this year. The defense did give up a touchdown. Josh Allen had a 1 yard run. Frank Gore did some great work in this one, but kind of the two stories in this. Look, I love watching Josh Allen because you have no idea what's going to happen every time he drops back. And he has the highest frequency of whoa, or outside of Mahomes, he has the highest frequency of whoa, what a play type of plays. And definitely has the highest frequency of like, dude, what are you doing type of plays.
Yeah, he has the largest range,
yep.
Right?
Yep, I mean, you get both sides of it, and today you got mostly the bad from Josh Allen. He ends up throwing three picks in this, and as usual, they're so many runaround plays, and you just don't know where the ball's going to end up ultimately. And it looked like he found maybe a little bit of a rhythm in the second half, and then he goes out with the concussion. He was very rudely concussed by one Jonathan Jones.
He was indeed. Here's the thing for me with Josh Allen. Everyone was sort of, you know, really hyping this game up, right? And it was the biggest game in Buffalo and however long, and you know, the streak of sex toys that were going to be thrown on the field was hoping to continue. It did not today. And so you have to worry, not only did the sex toy streak end, but also there was a wedding that happened on the field at halftime. You have to wonder if Bills Mafia is getting soft. But did Josh Allen sort of like let this, the aura of this game get to him? You know, and obviously the Patriots defense is very good.
Yeah.
But it, we should take nothing away from how good the Patriots defense is. But, you know, this is, again, this is a winnable game when you see what the Patriots offense put out there, when you see what Sean McDermott and his defensive staff were able to put together, and then you just have this sinking performance from your franchise quarterback, who, again, the variance is so incredible. And, Gary, I'm interested to hear what you have to say. The best quarterback in New York, is it Sam Darnold without mono? Is it Daniel Jones, or is it Josh Allen?
That's really interesting with Daniel Jones coming up. I'd still take Josh Allen out of this group. And look,
really?
I love the entertainment value of him. Darnold, I'm curious to see when he gets back, because I wonder if that week one performance, I mean, number one, and we'll talk about the Bills defense and what they did to the Patriots today, that week one performance was against the Bills, and they make a lot of quarterbacks look bad. And then number two, you wonder, I don't know, is this spleen acting up because he was, you know, he has the old smooching disease or whatever it is. And so I'm open to changing to Sam Darnold. I like Daniel Jones.
You're not even putting Daniel Jones.
I like Daniel Jones a lot. And I'm on the bandwagon. I guess I'm just really on the Josh Allen bandwagon. And I'm wondering this. So this was a game where it's all about how much do you rein Josh Allen in? You know, same way with, like, not that Josh Allen is Patrick Mahomes, but you're talking about a guy with similar physical ability. These are the two guys who can probably do things that no one else in the league is even capable of attempting. So, you know, you look at what Patrick Mahomes and what they've done with him down in Kansas City. They reined him in to an extent, but obviously you don't want to rein him in so much that you lose all the amazing out-of-structure plays he makes. It's the same deal with Josh Allen, just to a much more extreme level, and as you saw today. And I think if you do beat this Patriots defense, and I think when they were down 13-0 early, they kind of it added a little pressure to this one. But if you're going to beat this Patriots defense, it tends to come on out of structure stuff and weird stuff. And I always think back to Deshaun Watson's coming out party as a rookie, that week three game up in Foxborough, where, you know, he had looked terrible so far. And then all of a sudden he just, a lot of that was just making plays late in the down. And that's kind of what you look for to beat this Patriots defense. Otherwise, if you just, you know, like, if you have a Matt Barkley type out there, as the Bills had in the fourth quarter, and you're just trying to out-execute the Patriots, especially with the sort of, you know, they're improved in the receiving core in Buffalo, but they're still not a good receiving core. It's just not going to work. You're not going to move the ball. You're not going to score enough points. But let's talk about the Bills defense, because, as I said, Sean McDermott is criminally underappreciated, and He made Tom Brady look like Luke Falk in this game. I mean, this was a dominant performance by the Bills defense. 62 plays, 224 yards for the Patriots. My math tells me that's 3.6 per play, which is very Falk-esque.
Very Falk-esque. They were not able to sack Brady, right? But what that especially the back end of that defense, and I think White went out for a little bit. He came back in. I've always liked Jordan Poyer, and he does not get any of the credit I think he deserves. And so let's go ahead and give him that credit right here
officially.
And now,
we'll send him the certificate.
That's right. My printer's out of ink though. but I really like this Bills defense. I picked this Bills team to win the wild card. And I think that they still have the ability to, but it is completely and utterly dependent upon Josh Allen appreciating, the ball. He does not appreciate the football, nor does Sam Darnold. And this dates back to their days in college. They have, it's the exact same thing with Jameis Winston. I don't know if you can beat it out of these guys at this point. You hope to. I don't think you can out of Jameis Winston at this point in his career. You hope that you can get it with Josh Allen this early. But then again today, three interceptions. Like, you have to value the football if your team in today's NFL is going to win football games.
So we went the miscellaneous on this, and I did make sort of a cheeky remark about Josh Allen being concussed. It was a helmet-to-helmet hit. I don't think you would categorize it as dirty or anything like that. It was Jones sort of got caught as Allen was being sort of whipped around on the way down, and it almost looked like Allen got Jones as bad as Jones got Allen, although obviously Allen took the brunt of that. J.C. Jackson also was a force in this game. Had two interceptions, one very impressive one on the sideline, which technically should not have counted as an interception, as Gene Steratore pointed out. As Jackson was bobbling the ball, Zay Jones standing out of bounds did get a hand on it. Should have made that an incomplete pass, but regardless of that, it was a really, really impressive toe tap by the defensive back. And then Jackson, of course, was the one who actually blocked the punt early on. That was recovered in the end zone by Matt Slater. Matt Slater's first career touchdown, I believe.
So I'm going to stop you here because I thought that was a hell of an interception, and I don't care what the technicality is. Like, he made the play. I don't care if somebody was sent out of bounds and put a finger on it. Like, he made the play. You're saying that it shouldn't have been? Well, I mean, are you a narc?
Jonathan, we're a nation of laws, and according to the laws, that was not an interception.
Well, according to Magic Mike, I see a lot of lawbreakers out there tonight.
You're right, though. It was a highly impressive interception. He does get style points for that. And I will also send him the same certificate that we're sending out to Jordan Poyer. The good play certificate. Raiders Colts. This was, oh man, Andy Benoit just has tears streaming down his face over this one. Colts, they're on a roll. They're really getting some momentum here. They get the hapless Oakland Raiders coming in to serve as sort of the Washington Generals to their Globetrotters in this one. And the Raiders did it. Raiders have been really impressive on opening drives and those early scripts for Jon Gruden. They actually they've scored on three of their four games, two of them being a touchdown. So they're doing good stuff early, and then it tends to fall apart when they're not very good roster, which in no way needed Khalil Mack at any point. Does not get it done. But they jumped out. They jumped out 14-0. Trevor Davis, the former Packer, had a 60-yard run on a reverse. Neat little design for the Raiders there. And they just kind of held on in this one. And I guess the story, and I hate speaking ill of Jacoby Brissett because I do drink the Brissett Kool-Aid here, but no T.Y. Hilton, but Brissett just, he didn't have enough in this one.
No, he didn't. First of all, six ball carriers today for the Raiders. Six rushers for the Oakland Raiders today. Jacoby Brissett was okay. You know, you wanted to see him will this team back into contention, and that's what he did late in the fourth quarter. He gets it to 24-17, and then, you know, the Colts are driving yet again, or attempting their drive right before the 2-minute, and then he throws a pick six, a 30-yard interception there. I'll say this about Jacoby. Yeah, he did not have T.Y. Hilton, but then also Eric Ebron, who has been a breath of fresh air ever since he washed out of Detroit and found second life in Indianapolis. He had three first-half drops, and so he just could not get involved. And I can't blame Frank Reich and the offensive staff for not really getting him more involved in the second half after, you know, how poorly he played to begin the game. He had that touchdown there at the end of the game, but that doesn't excuse the first 30 minutes of the contest. So, you know, Brissett was looking. Obviously, he wants to have T.Y. Hilton. He's not out there. He wants to trust in Eric Ebron. He could not do that. And so it's really tough to get in sort of any sort of flow when that happens.
Yeah, it was it just didn't go according to script for the Colts here. And they did lose Marlon Mack late in this one as well with the ankle injury. But they didn't really get a chance to get this run game going, which has sort of been the main identity of this offense, even though we did see Brissett do some stuff in the first half against Atlanta last week. But it was just, they needed that big play at some point, and it just wasn't really there. They got a long touchdown to Ebron late to cut the lead to 31-24, which ended up being the final. But that was in the final minute of the game at that point when they're trailing by two touchdowns. So
you just can't lose this game if you're the Colts. Like I don't have a lot of respect for the Oakland Raiders 2019 franchise. Mm-hmm. Vontaze Burfict, who got ejected out of the game, who wears a captain's patch, really should be ejected from the NFL. And I'm happy to die on that hill. But you cannot at home lose to this Oakland Raiders team. And I'm not saying that they're the Miami Dolphins. They are not. But you stack up all the NFL teams, and they are certainly in the bottom quarter. And in an AFC South that appears to be wide open, this is a gimme kind of win. And I'm not saying that there are gimmies in the NFL, but relative to the league, this is a gimme victory. And the fact that they couldn't really get it that tight, and when they did, Brissett throws that pick six. Yeah, that says a lot about this team, and I don't know if they're ready just yet.
We'll see. They got some time to figure this out, and then they're kind of fortunate that the Texans sort of fell apart today against Carolina. So things, you know, pretty much wide open then at AFC South as we enter the second quarter of the season. Should mention Eric Harris, nice little wrinkle on that pick six. He had taken a couple steps like he was going to carry Eric Ebron on the deep crosser, end up stepping in front of the boundary receiver and picking that off after Brissett has sort of disregarded him. Other than that, I don't know. This is just, it was a bummer for Brissett. As you said, Vontaze Burfict tossed in this one for a helmet-to-helmet missile shot on Jack Doyle, and this one was, of all the things that Vontaze Burfict has done in the NFL, this one definitely ranks somewhere in the middle, so.
Yeah, which is incredible because Jack Doyle was entirely defenseless, and he comes in with the crown of his helmet to Jack Doyle's helmet crown. So, but you're right. This does not even probably rank in Vontaze's top four.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to turn back the clock too much here, but I do want to ask, well, as long as we're on this topic, Derek Barnett in the Thursday night game, you wanted him tossed, right?
Absolutely. 100%. The running back had been stood up. There were three Eagles who were there who not only had stopped his forward progress, but were pushing him in the opposite direction. And then from that direction in which he is being pushed and the play is whistled dead, you have Derek Barnett coming in like a missile. Whether or not he leads with the crown of his helmet, he makes helmet-to-helmet contact with him. And I thought this before he ever had to leave on a stretcher. This is very clearly the type of play that we are trying to eradicate from the NFL, the type of play that, like, hey, if parents are going to allow their children to play tackle football before the age of 17, they can't see this on television and thus have a healthy sort of sport. And the fact that this happened, and I'm sure that he was remorseful and regretful, mm-hmm, and all of those things, but you got to toss him. And I can't believe that he is not, so far, right? He's not suspended for the following week.
Yeah, especially because the NFL just tends to listen to the crowd reaction and then decide on their punishments. That's how they do it. It's Price is Right style. You look out in the crowd and then you decide what you're going to dish out here. But I'm totally with you, and I even allow for the fact that I don't even know if I would necessarily call that a dirty play. What it is a reckless and dangerous play, and it has to be discouraged in every way possible. And the way you do that is by punitive measures when
That's
someone
right.
does something like that. So, again, nation of laws. Let's go on to Lions and Chiefs here. These Detroit Lions are they're just breaking my heart every year. They gave one away in Arizona. They end up getting the tie. They were still unbeaten coming to this one. Patrick Mahomes come in. They had them dead to rights in this one. They end up, as you know, we talked about this a little bit before the show, they had five goal-to-go series, the Lions did. They ended up scoring 17 points on those series. They also gave up 7 points because Kerryon Johnson fumbled the ball on like the 3-inch line. And after everyone stopped, a Chiefs player, I think it was Bashaud Breeland, scooped it up and ran it for a 100-yard fumble return touchdown. And that's kind of what swung this game. The Lions did take a late lead. They were up 30-27 after a touchdown from Stafford to Kenny Golladay, who was an absolute beast as usual. But they left 146 seconds on the clock, and that was enough for Patrick Mahomes.
That's all it took. Out of all of the scoring drives today in this game, I think the longest one was about 5.5 minutes. I mean, this was a lightning fast game. I mean, not in terms of time, because in actual real time, this game took 3.5 hours, which is unheard of in today's league, uh-huh. right? If it's not an overtime game, they're usually, you know, 3 to 305 to 310. This was 334, but no drive lasted longer than 3.5 minutes, no scoring drive, rather. You want the Lions to be able to try to soak up just a touch more clock on that 79-yard drive that they ended up scoring on to take that late lead. Every time you see this, when you look at, all right, it's the plus side of the two-minute warning, so you know that Patrick Mahomes is going to have the two-minute. That I think they maybe had one. I think they still had two timeouts left at that point, the Chiefs did. And then at that point, as the Chiefs were driving, Detroit ended up having to use their timeouts to try to preserve some of the clock. Of course, the Chiefs could have just ran it out had Detroit been out of timeouts. So, interestingly enough, Patrick Mahomes does not account for a touchdown throwing or running the ball. I think this is the fourth or fifth time in his career. So roughly 20% of the time he goes out there, he does not account for a touchdown. He still does not have Tyreek Hill. And yet somehow on the road against a team that scores late, it doesn't matter. Yeah, you know, he can look at the ref as he takes off, checking to see if there's going to be a holding call and if he needs to expend this energy. That was an impressive thing. I wonder, Gary, do you think he does that knowing good and well that, like, in real time, we are all noticing it, and that's all we're tweeting about?
You think he goes home after every game, checks his mentions, does a little search for Mahomes on the old Twitter search box, and then sees what comes up?
Or he has his Mahomies telling him about it afterward.
Oh, that's probably a good point. He's probably got folks checking that for him. Yeah, it's funny. Yet, you know, I didn't even realize until you mentioned right before the show that he didn't account for a touchdown in this one, because it just felt like a very Mahomes-ish typical type of game, especially, you know, pretty tough environment on the road here in Detroit. There was one big play, and look, the only reason you don't really get on the Lions about scoring too early is because, Lord knows, they had enough trouble just getting the ball into the end zone, and they needed the touchdown there. They were down four. It wasn't a situation where they could have settled for a field goal. They had them fourth and eight, and they had, you know, they went man across the board. Coverage was great, and Mahomes just takes off and runs for like 15 yards up the middle on a scramble. And after that, it just sort of felt like, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah, he's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, he is. He's a regular Josh Allen down there in Kansas City. So,
I mean, he is by far, right, the leader. I mean, we're a quarter of the way through the season. Don't call it the quarter pole. That's when we are three quarters of the way through the NFL season.
Okay.
But a quarter of the way through the season, he is clearly the top pick for MVP.
He's the MVP,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it's boring, and we're all going to look around. It's going to be like that year where it was Brady and Wentz, and then Wentz got hurt. And then the last, like, month of the season, it was like, well, you know, how about this guy instead of Brady?
That's right.
And it was like, no, I mean, it's Brady. Like, it's stupid to say it's anyone else. And it's kind of reaching that point. Obviously, we're four games into the season. Maybe he gets hurt, God forbid, or maybe he just goes into a slump somehow. But he is. I can't call it the quarter point. I call it the quarter point.
I guess you could call it the quarter point. I just don't want horse folks getting upset with you.
He's the four-game MVP. MVP through four.
Can't argue it.
Put it on the certificate, and we'll send another one out. Let's go out to East Rutherford, where the Giants won a home game, which you don't see too often, and they just beat up on Washington. This was not a terribly competitive game. We'll get to the positive with Daniel Jones, even if it wasn't quite as impressive as the win in Tampa last week. But the headline here is what Washington's going to do going forward. They did finally make the switch to Dwayne Haskins in this game, and it just became immediately apparent that there was a reason they had not gone to Dwayne Haskins earlier, and that reason is he is not ready.
So Case Keenum looked incompetent out there.
He missed two touchdowns. I mean, this could have been a much more interesting game if Case Keenum makes those two throws.
And with no excuse, he missed those two touchdowns. And so they bring in Dwayne Haskins, and I do believe that it was against their better judgment. And I have been, after hearing reports out of Washington, it did seem clear that Dwayne is just, he's simply not ready. They believe in him. They believe in his development. He's just not ready. But Case Keenum was so bad today and made such fatal errors that it is difficult to look the rest of the players in the eye and say, no, we're going to keep rolling with Case.
No, I think it's like, going it's okay.
Right. Settle down, guys. It's going to be okay. Like, you have to maintain some measure of respect with your mm-hmm. players and your coaching staff. And so I do think that they put Dwayne Haskins out there a little too early. I hope that does not shake his confidence as a rookie, because it was a very difficult situation. He clearly was not ready. And now, as soon as you sort of, you know, pop that top, can you put the toothpaste back into the tube? I don't know how you... All right, you know, Dwayne got some time, but we're still going to roll with Case. Or when does Colt McCoy come back? It's a mess in Washington. And, of course, you know, they did the right thing a couple years ago when they went out and got Alex Smith. They 100% did the right thing. And then in this draft, they waited and waited and were patient, and they got their guy at 15 overall. They did the right thing. And so it's tough to bang on Washington when they have done the right thing at the quarterback position a couple of times. And when Alex Smith had a terrible leg injury, I thought they should have called Colin Kaepernick. That's a different story. But they went out and got the free agent quarterback that they had to get. And so again, time and again, they've done the right thing at quarterback, and they still keep getting screwed by the football gods.
I'm a little on Alex Smith. I'm still not thrilled about the fact that they... I think if they gave up the draft pick and made him a clear bridge guy, I wouldn't have as big a problem with it. They gave him the contract as well as gave up the draft pick, and I thought that was a little...
He was coming off the best season of his career, though.
Yeah, but he was you know, he wasn't going to bring the talent with him. He wasn't going to bring... I think Jay Gruden's system is fine. I think it's good. They just... And I guess that's the other question with Haskins going forward. This is a very, very bad supporting cast. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It's a bad offensive line, and as much as we have all enjoyed Terry McLaurin, and he's been a pleasant surprise as a rookie, they are not good at receiver. And there's no Jordan Reed, and you know, Vernon Davis still plays and vaults people sometimes, and we all like that. But I mean, this is you know, probably one of the bottom three supporting casts you can have in the NFL right now. And I don't know if you want to drop Dwayne Haskins into that and create some of the bad habits.
No, I want poor Dwayne to go back to the bench. I want him to continue to develop. I want Washington to continue to be bad. And, you know, whenever he needs to come out there, if it is around Halloween, that's going to be fine with me. But throwing him out there today, again, Case Keenum really didn't give his head coach any choice, yeah, because I can only imagine Jay Gruden turning to Adrian Peterson, right, as he's like chewing tobacco and spitting, you know, in between plays, right? that he's like, nope, I want you to go out there because I think that you can win with Case Keenum.
Other side of the ball, Daniel Jones, you know, it had some of his downs. He's going to be up and down as a rookie, and then part of being a rookie is sort of finding out the kinds of throws you cannot make in an NFL regular season game, and Daniel Jones got picked a couple of times in this one. Overall, I think it's another positive performance for Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, Sterling Shepard was his leading receiver. After that, you had Gallman, Ingram, and then some guys.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay, so he won the game, and you know, he was supposed to win this game, and that's great. 2-0 as a starter. It's impressive how bad this receiving group is for the Giants.
It is. And that's like no Saquon, no Golden Tate. Not that Golden Tate is a world beater, but he's a starting receiver in the NFL. And when you have Saquon and Tate and Shepard and Engram, you have something here. And if you chop off the top two of that, it's just it's not really getting it done. You would think.
No, I mean, that's correct. There is nothing more to add. It is, you know, good for the Giants for getting that Tampa Bay win. The Washington National Football Club is, you say, bottom three. I would, yeah, probably bottom three, bottom two for me. No one is touching the Miami Dolphins. That's a pretty good segue, isn't it?
It really is. And we go to the lightning round, and we are starting with the Chargers and Dolphins here. And I'm going to bore everyone with office talk right now because Jenny Vrentis and I, Jenny's a writer on The Editor, have been working on a Dolphins tanking story for a while for Sports Illustrated magazine. It prints out on paper. You can buy it at a newsstand. You can subscribe and have it sent directly to your home in exchange for money. It's quite a thing, but we have this Dolphins tanking story. It is closing tomorrow. It will come out in an issue that most people will see like Wednesday, Thursday this week. And around like 2:15, as this game was like 10-7 Dolphins and then 10-10, and Jenny was just like, what happens if the Dolphins win this game? And I think I just wrote back, I think we both resign at that point.
Well, so it's 10-10 at halftime, and I am not sourcing this. This is a complete joke. I have to sort of preface that because you're over here talking about like serious magazine stuff, and I'm going to make some joke. But the Dolphins are clearly, from the top down, they are committed to tanking, and thank God that they have such alignment within that organization that it is so clear. I know the players don't want it, and they have no say over it, and they have no power over it. But there is alignment within the organization, and there has been for a very long time. I fully believe that Brian Flores, when he took the job, knew what this season was going to be. Now, he might have thought that they would still have a Kenny Stills, that they might still have a Laremy Tunsil. They had some really great deals for those guys. But it was very clear, really, from New Year's on, that this Dolphins team was not going to be any better than 3-13. And so I'd like to think that at halftime of a 10-10 game, like Chris Greer hollered at Brian, who's like, hey, just make sure, whatever you do, that you guys do not win this game. They're going to go 0-16, Gary. And I don't think that it's even going to be close, because it really, we're talking about as close as it was, we're talking about a tie game at halftime. After halftime, this game was not close.
It was. I should correct. Chargers did score late in the first half and took a 17-10 lead.
Oh, 17-10 lead. You're right.
Halftime here. But it was, look, when you're tied with the Dolphins, it feels like an eternity. But they won't get the, you're looking at their schedule and circling. They host Washington in 2 weeks. They have a bye, and then they host Washington. So maybe you circle that one and say, could happen, but they won't. They don't get the Jets until November, where Sam Darnold and his spleen will be 100% healthy. And other than that, I don't know, man. I don't know where else they're competitive.
They're not, and they are losing and tanking at such a rapid rate. There was part of me a couple weeks ago, Gary, that I thought, are they going to be bad in 2020? Like, is the rebuild going to start? I mean, of course, they're going to be bad. I thought, is the rebuild going to start for 2020, or is it going to start for 2021?
I mean, this is, we kind of see what happened with the Browns and how it took the Browns a couple of years. This team is much worse than the Browns were. I mean, this team is much worse than the 0-16 Browns.
Joe Thomas.
They would lose by 20 points to those 0-16 Browns. And to your point, they have been outscored now 81-0 in the second half of games this season. So that tells you all about the halftime adjustments coming down the pike there for them.
Yep, they know to lose.
Oof. Jaguars, Broncos. Boy, lots of sad stories here. Just deja vu for the Broncos. They get a Joe Flacco leads a late touchdown drive. They take a 1-point lead. There is just a minute 32 left on the clock, and it looks like this is going to be a big celebration in Denver. And Gardner Minshew brings it back. There is a roughing the passer flag in there for good measure, just like the Chicago game. This one was, you know, none of the blow to the head, roughing the passer things are you can't get too excited about them, but this one was at least, unlike the Bradley Chubb one on Mitchell Trubisky, this was at least an actual penalty. You could argue it was a penalty, unlike just being a phantom call. But yeah, Jaguars bring it down. Josh Lambeau, 33-yard field goal. That's it. Another late loss for the Broncos at home.
Another late loss for the Broncos at home with a defensive coach. And not only that, the Broncos' losing record at home at Mile High since Peyton Manning retired. Gardner Minshew, You know, I'm going to forget the legend of Gardner Minshew and all this stuff. You can read more about it at various places, but certainly read about it at SI.com, mm-hmm. the legend of Gardner Minshew. But he's playing really well, and he was playing injured there on that last drive.
Yeah.
He got hit low, and he was still making the throws. That could be a decision that the Jags will have to make eventually. Again, AFC South wide open. Nick Foles making a ton of money. But you have a guy who, sixth-round pick, he's going to be cost-controlled for some time. I just want to say this about Jalen Ramsey. People, and I've said this on various podcasts throughout the MMQB network, and you should subscribe and review those podcasts. This is not a matter of money with Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
He does not want to play for that organization. He doesn't want to play for Tom Coughlin. He does not believe that Doug Marrone is doing, you know, winning things with that defense. So, like, people keep acting like, oh, just pay Jalen Ramsey that money because you guys can win in the playoffs or win the AFC South. Yo, it is not about that.
They want to pay Jalen Ramsey that money. I'm sure they'd love to sign him to a long-term deal. He doesn't want to be there.
He won't be in the facility long enough during the week to talk about a contract.
The only way this possibly gets resolved, and it just seems like such a pipe dream, is, you know, if the Jaguars end up getting to like 5-2 or something, if they just keep this sort of, you know, tightrope walk going where they're winning games like this, does that change Jalen Ramsey's mind where you say, oh, all right, I want to be a part of this after all? But yeah, I don't know, man. They just got to go get your first round pick for him. You're not going to get two ones. It's not the Khalil Mack thing happening again. You can very well get a one for him, and you go from there. But just pull the trigger.
And you're winning without him.
Yeah. And one other thing about this game, and Vance Joseph must be looking at this and just saying, well, I could have done that. It was Minshew. It was a lot of Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette ended up running for 225 in this game. You always talk about the Broncos and the home field advantage they have with the thin air and all that, and you know, they'll wear teams down. Jaguars ran 48 offensive plays in the second half. They ended up possessing the ball for pretty much 40 minutes in this game. Second half, I don't have the splits for the halves, but I can tell you they had the ball for a whole lot of time in the second half and just did to the Broncos exactly what the Broncos always think they're going to do to opponents up in Denver. And look, this is a team that trailed 17-3 late in the first half, and they came back and just took this one, and they took it in the style that the Broncos try to win games.
I think you don't have the splits in front of you, but I do think that they ended up with about 24 minutes of possession in the second half. They had a drive that lasted 10 and a half minutes.
Yep.
They had another drive.
That was the opening drive of the second half.
That was the opening drive of the second half. They also had one that was 7 minutes long. So in two drives, they had more than half of the second half in two drives, and then they had three other drives on top of that. So, yeah, I think if I'm doing some very crude math, you have the Denver Broncos with about 4 to 5 minutes time of possession in the second half.
I think it ended up being a little more than five. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. Oh, Broncos. Well, They'll get one of these quarterbacks too, and I don't know. You can have a rejuvenated fan base at that point, but that defense. Stop waiting for that defense to be 2015 again. It's just it's not going to happen. Seahawks, Cardinals. Seahawks go down to Arizona, and this was a fairly breezy win for Seattle. Jadeveon Clowney had a neat pick six where he just sort of absorbed a ball and took it back for a touchdown. Chris Carson would not be tackled in this one. He was just steamrolling sort of hapless Arizona defenders all day. But here we are, Cardinals. They have a tie this year, so give them credit for that. But this looks like a team with every problem they had 1 year ago.
That's exactly right. The Cardinals, the improbable tie, right? Because for the first 2.5 to 3 quarters of that Detroit game, it was very clear that Detroit was going to win that game. The Cardinals are not a good team. They have a good quarterback. They have a completely unproven head coach. He was unproven when he got the job. Through a quarter of the season, he remains unproven. And then you have a general manager that appears to still be living off of a 2015 season with Carson Palmer, who played at an MVP level. I mean, that's I don't know what Steve Keim has done in the draft or in free agency or in hiring head coaches, really, that indicates that he's the guy to continue leading this. I mean, he picked a franchise quarterback, and then a year later he had to give him away for a second-round pick.
I was going to say, what do you think they'll get for Kyler Murray next year?
Yeah, for who? For Jalen Hurts? The Cardinals have been, we talked about bottom three teams. I think the Cardinals are like a bottom four or five talent in terms of talent in the league. They were that way last year. And I don't know when it's going to get fixed over there because you can't introduce a number one wide receiver until Fitz retires. Christian Kirk looks good. I don't know if he is a number one. He's a solid two so far. And you want David Johnson to finally get back to his old ways. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I don't think the direction of this franchise, the trajectory of this franchise, is going to change until you get some change in leadership in the general manager position.
Yep. No, I'm with you on that, and I hope Steve Keim has that LinkedIn page updated. Last game of the Sunday slate here, Titans, Falcons. Titans just went into Atlanta, and you know, we kind of think of Atlanta as that home field advantage and all that stuff, and this was just not really a terribly competitive game. The Falcons moved the ball a little bit, I suppose, but they put 10 points up on the board. They missed a short field goal at some point, but this was, it feels like it's over for Atlanta. It felt like it was a team, it was one of the teams that I looked at and kind of said, all right, things break right. Offense gets going again. Defense is healthy again. They've since lost Keanu Neal. You figured they were going to slide back a little bit, and they just they were down 24-7 at halftime. They lose the game 24-10, and that's how it goes there now.
Yeah, it was not particularly competitive throughout the game. Matt Ryan sacked five times. You wanted Julio. He had one drop in there. Might have been tipped. They could not get any sort of ground game established. The Titans never allowed them to get it close. And, you know, I'd mentioned hot seat earlier. There's Jay Gruden, I think, has the hottest seat of all, and we will certainly see that play out with his quarterback decisions to come. Dan Quinn is probably right behind him with the Atlanta Falcons. They have not been able to recapture that 2016 magic or really anything similar to it since the Super Bowl. And I don't know if it's the curse of 28-3, but Dan Quinn's seat has to be the second warmest in the league. Ron Rivera, his NFC South counterpart, would be right there with him if he weren't 2-0 with young Mr. Kyle Allen.
Yeah. No, Quinn's been churning through those coordinators too, and you know, got another former head coach in Dirk Cutter there, and you know, he's always emphasized, you know, he likes guys who have head coaching experience. Sark obviously had done it at the college level, and I don't know. It just, there ended up being no continuity with what Kyle Shanahan had there, and you're just seeing the back end of it now, and you start to wonder. You see Devontae Freeman is sort of aging out of it. Is Matt Ryan going to age out soon? Alex Mack is looking like he's sort of on a...
Well, he just got banged up, and Ryan has actually played okay so far. He was playing almost at he was better than his MVP season a lot of last year. But this Falcons team, they got blown. The doors got blown off them by Minnesota in week one. Their Nelson Aguilar drop, I mean, and it is a walk-in touchdown away from losing that game at home on Sunday Night Football against the Eagles. They fall to the Colts, and now they're not competitive at home to the Titans. Like, this could very, very easily be an 0-4 team who, if you put their 11 on offense and their 11 on defense, and I know Keanu Neal is down, obviously, but at the start of the season, if you put their 11 out there, there may not be a better 22 top to bottom in the league. And right now, they are a Nelson Aguilar drop away from being 0-4.
Nice win for the Titans, though. Nice bounce back after that pretty listless performance on Thursday Night Football in Jacksonville. So they're still in it. AFC South. I think that's a wrap for the show. I will end it on a slightly positive note instead of just being sad about the Falcons.
Yeah, go Titans.
There you go. All right, that's going to do it. The MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast is Jonathan Jones and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.